Hello and welcome to the U Sports Done Right podcast. My name is Dan Harrison. I'm the host of the show. I'm coming to you today live from Hamline University in sunny St. Paul on the beautiful campus. I'm sitting down today with Jason Verdugo, the athletic director here. Jason, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Jason, quite a storied athletic career for yourself. Some highlights I know about, you know, winning the Saints championship.
Yeah, it was a great experience. Great memory for sure.
I know you went to Arizona State University, pitcher there, played football too, two-sport athlete, Division I. That's a pretty big deal. A lot of the people who are listening to us today may have dreams of playing at that level. When you think back to those days, what kind of advice do you have for kids? Maybe a lot of our kids are in that fourth to eighth grade range, but I'm sure there's older ones. What was your experience like, and what would you take away from it? Or maybe share and say, here's what I did that made a difference.
I would say, you know, I grew up in a family that was full of athletes. Athletics was a huge part of our life. My dad was a coach. My mom was a high school athlete. All my, you know, uncles grew up in a small town prior to moving to Tucson. In Hayden, Arizona, a small mining town. And so one of the things for me, growing up in a small town, you know, you played the season. So football, basketball, baseball, whatever was the season, you played. So when I transitioned to Tucson, that was kind of just fortunate for me. That's kind of how it went. So, you know, being a three-sport high school athlete at a very big school, you know, 2,000 kids, it was something that was just natural, so I was pretty fortunate. But fortunate for me, you know, I had a dad who was really supportive and realistic about, you know, high school sports, youth sports, and those things. You know, I think more than anything, what I look back on now, the biggest difference is the volume of games. Fortunate for me, as much as myself or my teammates, we love playing games, you know, we practiced a lot more than we played games. So just the day-to-day instruction, learning how to really enjoy practice. And fortunately for me, you know, it was something that I enjoyed, the camaraderie of practice. I enjoyed practice and doing, spending as much time, you know, in that setting as much as I did the game. I mean, the game was really fun, and don't get me wrong, but it was, I was fortunate enough that that was kind of ingrained in me, and you know, those are some of my fondest memories, being on the sideline watching my dad coach or watching my brother play, or even just being at practice with my teammates, you know, in Pop Warner to Little League to youth basketball.
Well, I know that's one of the questions listeners will recognize I ask a lot of people is, how is it, you know, so often we see kids specializing at maybe, without tipping my hand of how I feel, at a ridiculously young age to say, hey, I'm doing this 12 months a year, and it sounds like you'd really encourage them to expand their spectrum on that.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, getting an opportunity, and you know, I want to be realistic. Time is of the essence. It's amazing to me that we've become more efficient with time management opportunities with the phone and things like that. However, in some cases have become counterproductive. And you know, now the organization aspect, there's more opportunities to play a particular sport year-round, whether it's baseball or basketball, whatever it may be, lacrosse or some of these things, hockey here in the state of Minnesota, there's opportunities, you know, to do that, where I would say that back in the day that wasn't the case. You know, nobody was picking up a baseball glove or during the football and basketball season per se. That was really foreign. So you were either kind of forced to do it on your own or, you know, or play another sport. So to me, if families, you know, can invest in doing it early on, I think it's a great opportunity to, you know, to hone skills in everything, and you get an opportunity to be competitive in multiple environments, which is always a plus.
When you talk about that, you opened up that part of how important practice is to games, and I think that's another thing. You know, I run an athletic association, and one of the challenges we face all the time is, everybody wants to be in tournaments. Everybody wants to be in games. And yet we don't have people arguing for the practice. And like, I think you may be talking about learning that skill and maybe even the mastery versus just playing.
Yeah, you know, I try to equate. I think I probably played when I was 10, 11, 12, kind of the Little League season, maybe All-Stars, I probably played max 20 to 25 games. And then if we did well in the postseason as far as that, you know, so that's, you know, in a summer in Arizona, there's a lot of sunny days there, you know. So to only play 25, 30 games is not a lot in comparison to, you know, some of these kids now can do that in, you know, a month just based on weekends, you know, 7-8 games a weekend or what have you. So the practice setting, you know, really forces you, you know, at least at that time, coaches were really creative and just, you know, figuring out ways to captivate kids' attention. And fortunately for me, I always had some pretty good coaches that were good at organizing a practice or having things in a practice. Really, just they become enjoyment.
So as a you were the head baseball coach here for how many years?
11.
11 years, and I know you guys had quite a bit of success. So how does that did it feed up that way too in your approach as a coach to say, you know what, we really need to focus on the skills? Obviously in college it's not really your choice. You know, you don't get to say, hey, I'm only have less games. You got a certain number. But did that feed how you taught too?
Yeah, that's probably, especially as a collegiate coach at our level, you know, there's so many things from an administrative standpoint that, you know, the best part of the day really is practice, because there's so much in the recruiting process to administrative scheduling, all those different things. And in some cases, that's kind of, I shouldn't never say that it's easy, but it's the easiest part because that's where you get to have the most fun in some cases. So, yeah, practice is always something that I enjoyed. I enjoyed it a part of, you know, part of the season more than anything. The games obviously are, a result of how you performed in practice and did you improve and things like that. But really, that was, I was, like I said, those influences at a young age, really good high school baseball coach, really good high school football coach, all those things. Those influences, even collegially, were really big influences on how I coached in terms of just the daily routine and things like that. And then we had really good assistant coaches who were committed to that vision as well, and they enjoyed it as well. So, yeah, practice is something that you can really improve a team if you're really committed to it.
So tell me as a, you know, obviously you're an athletic director now, and I'm gonna ask you a few questions about that.
Yeah.
But since I have an experienced player, I mean, you were a pitcher, and when you're a coach, what did you do? How did you approach that practice plan? Is it like you had a whole season plan at the beginning of the season and you broke it out in pieces of that? Do you have a broken down practice plan every day that really spells out what you're hoping to accomplish? How did that look?
Yeah, that I would say from a baseball standpoint, it went back to, you know, had really good Little League coaches who played collegially and professionally. And even as an 11, 12-year-old, you know, the practices were run very similar to if we were to say, oh, we were going to go to a collegiate practice and what that was going to look like. And my high school was the same thing. We show up to practice. The practice schedule was on the board, and it was segmented, to the minute about what we were going to do. And there were things in there that, you know, I think more than anything, something as simple as like playing catch, you know, that was segmented into the practice schedule. And something as simple as, oh, where they're just going to warm up was a big, big part of our practice in terms of, you know, the importance that it wasn't just, hey, we're warming up. This is actually something that is extremely valuable to, that is going to determine whether we improve on the field or not. You know, some throwing and catching the ball are, you know, seem simple at times, but if you look, the teams that can do it the best at the highest level typically have really good seasons.
Yeah.
So, you know, if they can catch it and throw it, you know, those are some of the better teams in any league.
Yeah. Yeah. So, the catch play and having them organized there. If I talk to you about the mental game, you know, so I'm a baseball coach and we're into the mental game, and people who listen to our podcast know we talk a lot about that. How did you see that? Did it change? I mean, you're about my age, but I know coaching is changing. But when you were coming through, I mean, ASU was were you the best in the country at that time? You were one of the best programs for sure at that point.
Yeah, we had a lot of success. I would say that my freshman year, we had a lot of talent. I think we finished third in the country, went to World Series. The next year we had a new coach, Pat Murphy, came in, who's now the bench coach with the Brewers, and started to focus in those areas a little bit more. You know, at that time, you know, when you're 18, 19, 20, 21, you'll care more about the physical aspect and stuff, and just figure out ways to physically get it done, get bigger, faster, stronger, you know, get it done. As you start to implement some of those things mentally, it's really, you know, talking about how you deal with disappointment when things are, you know, the failures aspects of the game and how you handle that emotional, you know, that emotional position, if you will. I strike out, how do I handle that? You know, I give up a home run, how do I handle that? You know, do I let those emotions compound that ultimately lead to more, you know, more difficulty in trying to overcome things that the opponent might present itself? So, yeah, so I think for me, I really didn't, you know, figure that out in its entirety. Those are some of the things I still think that, you know, coaches now spend a lot more time discussing, just because it's a hard thing to get kids to grasp. But it's, you know, not only kids, but even kids at the collegiate level. How are we coaching them to handle the disappointment? The old school days of that are gone. Now we got to really focus on how we can improve students so that they're, you know, they can handle those adversities.
So even a superstar pitcher such as yourself had some failures along the way?
a lot of them. You know, that's, you know, reflecting back, some of the, you know, just like anything, some of the moments that I remember most are some of the failures, you know, whether they're giving up a home run or throwing in an interception or fumbling, whatever, missing a winning, you know, a winning shot, whatever it may be. Those are some of the things that I, you know, I recall. But at the same time, those are some of the things that have really helped me in my professional career and just my life in general at times. And again, it's not to say that you're not going to have hiccups along the way, even in adulthood, but those adversities in athletics have helped me. You know, helped me in a lot of ways. I wish I didn't have to go through them, but that's life. No, you know, nobody. There's no life that doesn't have adversity in some way, shape, or form. You know, that's just the reality of it. So athletics gives you an opportunity to experience those things in some cases, especially, you know, for somebody like myself. Athletics was such a huge part of my life and everything, from, you know, my identity to my hobbies to my passions to my family, everything. So the level of the amount of care in certain aspects, you know, if I lost a game, you know, my teammate, it may not have affected him in the same manner as me. You know, for me, I would be visibly upset. It would just, you know, it would wear on me, you know, wear on me significantly, even as a coach. And to others, I always admire others that could figure out a way to get back to center, that they could get back and overcome those things, or it didn't necessarily visibly bother them as much. But at the same time, I was just like, that's who I was. That's, you know, who I was as a person and how it was to me. So, but as you know, Jimmy Wine, our baseball coach, said, he went to the convention and he heard somebody speaking. One of the things that they said is, you know, those that are the very best can figure out a way to get back to center very quickly. And I think that's, you know, it's great to think about that. You can never get too high and too low. You know, you get back to kind of that, you have a monumental success and get back to center. You have a monumental failure, get back to center. You know, the sooner you can do that, to me, the easier it is to sustain some consistency in your life, professionally, athletically, whatever it is.
Sports sure seems like it's one of the only places left where you can actually get to a middle. Everything else is really pushed into the extremes all over the place. So as a coach, you know, you obviously come out of pitching being really good. I'm assuming you must have been at least partially the pitching coach here. You know, coaching can be cathartic, right? Where I know for me it's always been like some of my demons I was able to get through because I was able to go back a second time and talk to some other people. Did you find that being something that you worked with when you were working with pitchers who had a bad day?
Yeah, first and foremost, I think one thing I learned, especially when I arrived at Hamlin, I was very young when I first started here. I was 25. I was just starting my career. And, you know, there was an assistant coach here who was in the football staff at the time that took me aside. And he just said, you know, you got to remember this game is hard. You know, athletics is really hard. You know, remember how difficult it was. You know, nobody is perfect. So there's no kid or anybody that's going out onto a field, you know, or the ice or the mat, whatever it may be, and is trying to intentionally fail, you know. And so you just got to remember that in the coaching aspect. The same thing with me now as an athletic director. You know, I know how hard it is to coach. I know how hard it is to have a successful program in our conference in the MIAC, how hard it is to win games. I got to get back to middle and remember that at times. And it's hard. You know, so as we want to have all of our teams have success, or, you know, they have the ebb and flow, like this year, you know, on the men's side, we're going through a tough stretch. And it's not that coaches are different, but what I admire most, they treat the kids well. Their priorities and their focuses are on the right things, why we're here. And for me, that's why I said I share that with them. I really wish every one of our coaches could come on this side from an administrative, so that they can see, you know, all their peers in the department in its entirety. Because I feel like if I were to go back and coach, I would be so much better now than I was before. I think that's one of the things for me, being on this side of the table and looking back, reflecting on all the mistakes that I made, you know, situations where I didn't handle kids particularly well or a team particularly well. You know, I always reflect back on the 2012 team. You know, we won it the year before. We made the NCAA tournament, and that next team, I didn't coach them well. You know, I didn't handle them as, you know, well. I think about even individuals that I'm like, God, if I would have handled or just figured out a way to coach and mentor this kid a little bit different, he might have had a much better career. You know, and I'm pretty hard on myself related to that. Because, you know, those are things that, as I think of now, you know, you don't get a second chance in some cases. So you just, you know, as an administrator, you try to have conversation with coaches so they have a sense of urgency to do those things the right way, or even sense of urgency to build their program in a right way so they can sustain success. You know, because the difficulty is, you know, I saw this morning there was a clip of Muffet McGraw, who's a basketball coach at Notre Dame, women's basketball coach, who's had a tremendous amount of success, and it showed her visibly upset at the you know, after losing, getting beat by NC State by 35 points or what have you, and to visibly see her crying and upset, I would tell you there's a lot of coaches that have that emotion of feeling privately. You know, sometimes it's, you know, it's in the public eye, but privately, you know, and there's no coach that is absolved of having a significant amount of emotion like that, you know, especially if you really care about, you know, your kids and your program and all those things, in which, you know, a majority of them do.
Yeah, I think you hit a good point there, and that it makes me think. I think all coaches have a certain fire that, you know, it's almost like all fires. It can keep you warmer, it can burn you, and somewhere, you know.
That's a great one, yeah.
Yeah, you're kind of on that point of saying you're always going somewhere, and I know one of the hardest things I learned as a coach was to use the same compassion on myself that I tried to teach with the kids. I mean, you're a fantastic AD. Obviously, objectively, the Under Armour 2018-19 AD of the year, that's a pretty good reward.
Thank you. Yeah.
But I think probably you would say it's a process of saying you follow a process. You understand that there's going to be good and bad. And it sounds like, and this is a statement question, you're basically kind of coaching your coaches, it sounds like, or at least sharing some of your experience and wisdom or things you see.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I try to, you know, I try to without micromanaging. I think one of the things for me is I try to limit my communication with the coaches in ways that, you know, other than casually, how you doing? I mean, we're all extremely busy. So for me, I always made a commitment. If I were going to be an athletic director, I wasn't going to be somebody that was going to manage them in a way other than maybe even mentor them. Just say, here's some of my experiences. Here's what I think, you know, and really thinking about that from, here's what I think is important in terms of, you know, from recruiting numbers to recruiting strategy to showcasing highlights that might be a good fit here to what, you know, the calendar for your program should look like, you know. for me, that's a little bit of the mentoring aspect in terms of management, you know, and the micromanaging aspect. I never wanted to do it, nor do I care to do it. I think it's, you know, if I look across the board of the coaches that we have on our staff here, or just even my colleagues that are athletic directors, you know, majority of them, they're all trying to hire somebody that's the right fit, that's going to be the right fit for their institution, and then figuring out ways to mentor them, giving them the opportunity to try to be successful as possible, and giving them tools to be successful. And that, you know, as we talked about earlier, that becomes a little bit more difficult because for some of them, they're not always going to have all the resources. So where their coaching comes in is, how do I get creative? Mm-hmm. You know, for me, that was one of the things here. We had, you know, we didn't have a baseball field on campus. We had to go over to Midway and didn't always have that at our disposal. So how do we utilize the facilities that we have here to be successful and then not letting our kids make an excuse to that? So if that's hitting batting practice on a soccer field before the MIAC championship game instead of on a real field, then that's what we have to do. You know, if we have to take ground balls in a turf field, on a turf football field, and make a diamond out of it, we'll figure it out. You know, so I think those are some of the things. And that goes, which people don't understand, happens even at the highest level. Everybody can say, you know, everybody can use more resources and stuff, but coaching is really the creativity of that, figuring out ways to creatively improve your team. Yeah. And that's what it's about. And captivating them too. Captivating their attention, sustaining their attention, because just like anything, the humanistic side of everything, there's going to be ebbs and flows.
Well, resources seem to be something that everybody looks over the fence and says, the next one up or the next one up. I know, yeah. I coach at a high school, and we look at the next, you know, we look at the Gophers maybe, or look at you, right, and say, oh, wow, you get to play at CHS Field.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's beautiful. You got great, yeah, locker rooms. But like you said, I think it's always that using of resources and being creative. And like, I love what you just said about keeping people's attention, because our youth coaches, that's one of the big things I think we can lose track of, is we'll start talking. We had our first practice the other day for sophomores, and I literally have myself on a timer thinking, be quiet, be quiet. How do you talk about hitting without going too far? What do you look for in a coach? And think about this maybe from our perspective of youth. What could you tell coaches, are, you know, maybe the best traits you say, this is what really is important, or this is what you need to? I think we talked about practice plan. I think that would be a mechanical thing. But
yeah,
what mechanical kind of attitude or what kind of skills do you see best sitting or fitting in a coach, or maybe even the ones that you liked? I mean, you've seen this thing from little kid all the way up to the highest levels.
I think personality is such that, you know, they have the ability to be themselves, you know, and in every personality you have those from, you know, the very best of what we see in terms of from personality like Bill Belichick to Nick Saban to PJ Fleck or whoever it may be, in terms of things that in the state of Minnesota that we might look out and say, oh, these are some of the best coaches in the world, so to speak. And so they have, you know, it seems like they're pretty comfortable in their own skin. This is who they are. This is what they do. They're exceptional communicators. They have the ability to communicate effectively in ways that whatever the message they're trying to get across of a particular drill or a particular thing within their program, and saying, here are the things that we're going to emphasize on. You know, I think some of the best that I've seen, they all keep it extremely simple. I think one of the things that we do, even creating a practice plan or anything, we can get systematically very technical and say, God, this is how many drills we're going to do, or this is what our practice is going to look like. So simplifying, they have the ability to take something as simple as the monotony of a ground ball and something as simple as that from a baseball sense, and saying, you know, not making taking 100 ground balls boring. You know, they have the ability to captivate their kids or their students or their athletes in ways that, you know, they can see value in doing the same thing over and over and over and over again and not get bored.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's why I think back when people say, like, why, you know, my teammates, ELA practice, it's boring. That was never boring to me. So for me, from a coach's standpoint, it was easy for my coach to coach me because I enjoyed that practice so much. But I'm not a majority of those those kids.
You're an outlier.
A little bit, you know, so you're going to have the top 20% of your team that are going to be that way. You're going to have the top 20, bottom 20% that really don't, maybe just don't enjoy it to the level, and then you're going to have that middle tier. So how do you, persuade or captivate that middle tier of students or kids to, you know, at least why the time that they're there, they're invested to the degree that they're really committed. And then when they go and they leave it there, leave it at the field and go on to do something else. But for me, the coaches that I see that are really, really strong, they just have a really strong presence. You know, they're very organized. They have very good sense in terms of communicating, and not in a demeaning way, but in a more demanding way.
Sure.
You know, with high expectations. And then for those that say, well, you know, they have the ability to explain the why, I think that's, you know, as we talk about our era of coaches, I don't know that we dared ask why.
Yeah.
We just did.
Right.
You know, and did and repeat and did and repeat and did and repeat and did it in a way that we were really trying to continually master that particular skill rather than ask why. We just knew that our coach asked us to do something. We're going to do it to the best of our ability and at a high level. I think now is, you know, with Google, we can Google and say, you know,
sure.
We can get information. And so the information of they want justification of why we're going to do that,
yeah.
You know. And something as simple as, say, you know, we're doing this because this will give us the best opportunity to improve our skill, whatever it may be. You know, I think those are some of the best coaches that I've seen.
Well, I heard one of the best coaches I've listened to echo what you said, but understanding why you're doing it too as a coach probably helps too, to say why do we do it this way, you know, helps us sharpen that edge.
Right.
So you hit a little bit, we've talked a little bit on the podcast before about that intrinsic motivation. Is there a way, what's the best ways you've found to foster that intrinsic motivation? Is it innate, or is it something that a coach can create an environment that's more positive towards it?
Yeah, you know, that's a tough question, because again, you know, the intrinsic aspect, you know, you would love to, you know, you ask coaches, oh, this team was really good, or, you know, this team that if they didn't have a good year, oh, hey, we didn't have good leadership that year, you know. And again, it's what do kids care about, and do they care about it to the level of, is it important to them? You know, is it important enough to the point where my commitment to this is more important than my discomfort? And that really comes down to this, just like anything in life, right? Like my commitment, you know, far weighs out my discomfort. You know, if I want to run a marathon, I know that the training and the marathon itself is going to be very demanding, grueling, and uncomfortable. But,
yeah.
You know, is it that I'm chasing that so I can feel that, or is it the process? And so, again, it goes back to, you know, how do you break it down to the point where kids or your team or whatever it may be is like you're focusing on one particular process oriented, not result, which is really hard in athletics. I think that's the hardest thing. If you were to ask me, when people say it's focus on the process, which again, but if those processes don't show at some point some type of success, it becomes really difficult to commit into that. Because again, I think athletically, that's why I think it's really difficult in college athletics, is because you can have programs that are running well. Their rosters are good academically. Their practices are aligned. The kids are having a great experience, and the results aren't that. So from an outside influence, they're saying, we need to fire this coach. We need to get rid of him. And as a result, you're starting to see that more now than ever before. I mean, you're seeing coaches at our level get let go so fast. That's why, for me, it's just, you know, being patient to that. You know, I got to always go back to that. What does our roster look like? What are our kids? What does our practices look like? What does our enthusiasm look like? What's our academic commitment in the classroom in this particular program? So try to focus on, you know, more micro goals than one just big goal. Because,
yeah.
Again, I know a lot of programs that they win and it's not a good environment. I mean, we've seen that as well too. So, or it comes at a significant expense of some sort. So,
I like that micro goals, because I think we do talk a lot about process and control the controllables, but there is a sort of little kids are almost great in that, you know, they kind of understand, well, this is what we want to accomplish. If we're not accomplishing it, why?
Right.
Exactly. And it's almost that clarity of saying, well, can you measure it well enough to say, what's my coach doing? What's my child doing? Because as a parent, I know it's challenging when you watch and you watch in baseball, you know, you strike out, you get out, you have a bad streak, you know, you're pitching and you get lit up. And it's just one of those things where, like, we're focusing on the process, but this isn't very fun. Right. Right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it's really tough. You know, it's tough to experience, you know, failure. That's one of the things about athletics, you know, the result will tell you right away.
Could you give me a thought for an athlete? You see them all here. So you're a youth athlete looking at going to college. Let's say you were given just a broad stroke of advice. What would you kind of tell them, some things to look out for, some things maybe even in their selection process, or how do you start to think about if I'm going to college to be an athlete?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I think first and foremost, there are a lot of schools out there and a lot of them that do it well. And so what I mean by that is you can go and you can experience – you can go to a lot of schools, some that have high prestige names, some that maybe are a little bit smaller, and that's the beauty about the NCAA or NAIA or junior college. You know, we got a wide range of opportunities, you know, and just depends on where I fit in. First and foremost, I'd say, like, in the recruiting process, asking really critical questions, what that's going to be like, what's the environment like, what's the commitment level like from the players currently in the program. The other part is making sure you understand that it's work. You know, it's a big commitment, and the level of commitment of what it may have been like in U sports compared to high school is significantly different in terms of, you know, from high school to college, I mean, is another jump. So really, I think more than anything, looking in the mirror and asking yourself that, or even from a family standpoint, having the dialogue, we say, understand that this is going to be difficult, you know, and what am I willing to commit to during this process and to what level? Because the reality of it is there are going to be some difficult times. You know, it's always a transition. But looking at a particular school, obviously the financial component is always something that you need to be cognizant of, the experience and of the program, and is it run well and is it organized. But yeah, from a straight advice standpoint, there's so many different opportunities out there. I think more than anything to keep in mind is just thinking about understanding the level of commitment that it really takes. Have a really clear cut understanding, because there's a number of students that are capable, you know. They may not enjoy it to the level of wanting it to be, you know, wanting to commit to that much. And that's okay as well.
The part that I think is really true, and it's maybe one of the best pieces of advice I've heard for kids, is that it is going to be hard work, and it's going to be – there's a lot of kids wanting to work hard. I know we were talking before we started recording about the percentage of kids who transfer. I believe the LSU quarterback had transferred out of Ohio State, maybe?
Ohio State, correct.
Yeah. And so it's changed a little bit, but I think it's really important for kids and especially parents to understand that it's going to be hard work. It's going to be a lot of time. I heard a couple of your stories when you were saying before we recorded, and I know you'd say you'd never trade any of that hard work for anything, but it is an attitude to come to. I mean, I see athletes, they're probably going to be working their butts off at 6 a.m. when some of their friends might have had more fun than they did the day before, and they're doing something else fun, whereas you're saying, hey, I got to love this and I got to grind at it.
Well, there's 100, you know, we jokingly said there's 168 hours in the week. And as a collegiate athlete or a collegiate student, just in general, just take a general student, 168 hours in the week, and you break out your time, you know, and you're going to sleep hopefully 8 hours of every day, and then time in school to that, you know, so there's going to be a sacrifice somewhere. So, you know, I always say if, you know, the social aspect of is far more of a priority to you than maybe 20 hours of practice, workouts and all those things, you know, and that's okay, you know, but there's going to be a sacrifice somewhere in terms of that if you're going to be a collegiate. I mean, it's a sacrifice now for a youth athlete or a high school kid. You know, there's just going to be, you know, can you juggle it all? Yes, you can, but you're going to have to minimize certain aspects of your life, you know, and whether that's from Division I on down to Division III or anything. I mean, there's certainly a significant level of commitment that, and the other part is playing time becomes more scarce, success becomes more scarce the higher level you go up. So again, so asking yourself, okay, you know, am I willing to commit 22 hours of the time, because that's what it's gonna take for me to, you know, vault into maybe playing a little bit more, or, you know, I was just okay in the league, but now I want to be an all-conference or an all-American. You know, the sacrifices that are going to need to be made for you to not guarantee opportunities of success, but to have more opportunities of success. So that, to me, is that's where it becomes, when you start to look up that hill, is that hill becomes so significant that you're like, I don't want to climb it, you know. And that's tough. That's where I said the family influences as well, having those conversations.
Trying to manage that idea of saying, if you're D1 and you sit three deep on the bench, is that better than saying, hey, I'm going somewhere, I want to play, because that's part of my experience?
Yeah, you know, the playing time aspect and all those, that's why I said choosing the right school is really critical. You know, and again, choosing the right school, I think, you know, coaches have done a remarkable job of in the recruiting process. I think some do it really well in terms of to say, hey, I'm going to, you know, this is who I am, and when you get there, that's who they are. Yeah. You know, and there's some that this is who they are, and then you get there and that's not how they are. So I think, you know, that's the other aspect. Being genuine in the recruiting process is really key. And the other part is make sure that you enjoy playing the sport more than you like being recruited. I can't say that enough. And that includes, you know, that includes the families. You know, they like having all the social media posts and this is how many offers I got, or this. I want somebody that is an athlete, is a student athlete, you know, that is really enjoys that. I don't want somebody that's cares more about being recruited than they right. do like playing. And that's where you see that pitfall, because the recruiting process, it's really a role reversal. You have so much, you garner so much attention, and then you get there and it's like, oh wait, you're being rewarded now by having to do all this work. And right. the work is significant. It is the 6 a.m. workout. It is the extra throwing sessions. It is, you know, the extra film sessions. Yeah. So it's tough.
It's the actual work. Well, Jason, I appreciate you so much taking the time to sit down with us today and talk. I mean, you're here at Hamlin. I know you guys have some fantastic facilities, tons of good things happening around here as well. What would you tell people a little bit about Hamlin? Say, give me a 30-second, what's the good news here?
Well, I think the biggest thing for us is, you know, in my 8 years here, we've improved as a department. We've improved our academic profile. We've improved the fit of our coach. I think the stability within our coaching staff. We have a lot of coaches that have been in place now. Not a ton of turnover, which has been great for us, which is really difficult. But our environment and our culture, I think, is very good. I think our coaches care about the student athletes at a high level. I think they prioritize the right things and want our student athletes to have a good experience and graduate on time. And that's, you know, I got to continue to think about that. And hopefully through that process, we get an opportunity to experience some wins as well. And in the event that we don't, you know, we're still in a position where we're equipped to handle those adversities, because our coaches have done a good job of helping the student athletes. So I'm really proud of the work we've done, super proud of the fact that, you know, next year will be the start of my 20th year. And go Pipers.
Yeah, it's awesome. Well, you guys got beautiful facilities here. I know I see games down at CHS Field. Yeah. You're staying here right next to your wonderful workout facility, gyms, all those things. Campus is beautiful. So, again, Jay, I appreciate you taking the time talking to us today. People, if you like what you hear, give us a like, share the podcast. Talk to you soon.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.